Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to yet another edition of Metaphysical Romp 2. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. I'm delighted you're listening. And of course, it's another beautiful day in my consciousness at the Kansas City end of the virtual kitchen table. And of course, at the other end are
Reverend Dr. Cher Holton at the Durham end. And it is another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, also at the Durham end. And it is very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness as well. And as you guys know, Cher and I are the co-founders of a hybrid virtual unity ministry called the Unity Center for UniversalProsperity.com. And that universal is Y-O-U-Universal, because it's about your spiritual growth.
And you can find us very quickly and easily by going to these letters, UCFYP.com. That'll take you right there. And there's also a link to our Higher Consciousness Academy, where we're posting some classes and videos of our recordings of our Sunday cafes and Wednesday pop-ups.
Wow, what a fun project that must have been.
It is continuing to be fun. It's still a project in progress, but people are invited to come now and check it out.
Yay. So did you give that address?
You can get there from UCFYP.com. That's probably the easiest thing. Just scroll down and there's a big link to go check it out.
That's excellent. Great. And of course, I have my website, paulhasselbeck.com, where you can find my calendar and where you can find my weekly blog, The Absolute Word, which we feature at the end of this program. And I send it out as a weekly email. So you can email me at alberthasselbeck@gmail.com, or you can get that information on my website, paulhasselbeck.com. It's free, and I'd be delighted if you asked to receive it. Cher, take it away.
We have something really cool to talk about today. Of course, we do every week. This is something a little different. It comes from an article we found, that Paul actually found, called Growth Mindset. And the article is questions and answers with Mary Murphy, who, not the dancer, for those who are ballroom people. It's a different Mary Murphy, because when I saw Mary Murphy, I thought, what? But this Mary Murphy is the Herman B. Wells Endowed Professor of Psychological and Brain Sciences. She's also the founder of Equity Accelerator at Indiana University. And the article is all about, it's actually focused on young people, but as we read it, we said, this just applies to everybody, and we could see a lot of application for our spiritual discussion as well. So it's helping young people foster a growth mindset. So our topic is all about, do we have a growth mindset or not? And where do mistakes, and how we look at mistakes and failures, how does that fit into the mindset that we have and affect our growth as we move forward?
Yeah, I found this really interesting and simple in a way, which sometimes we get into topics that aren't so simple, right? All right. So the first question is, what is a growth mindset that's distinguished from a fixed mindset? Growth mindset is the belief that intelligence and other abilities are malleable and that we can improve them through effort, seeking help, and trying new strategies. Now, I can understand why fixed mindset was a concept for a while, because it was believed that the brain was not changeable. And now we know about neuroplasticity, that our brains can change themselves in a way in response to outer stimuli. So that's always good news to me. And I think the three of us live in a kind of growth mindset. And I would say Unity people in general have more of an upbeat, because these ideas of this growth mindset are more upbeat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And it ties in, we've had other discussions around the concept of confirmation bias. And when we have a belief that we refuse to allow new ideas in, I would call that also a fixed mindset. We've already made up my mind. Don't confuse me with the facts. kind of an attitude.
Yeah.
And that keeps us in a box. It keeps us from growing and expanding and learning.
And that's, of course, the important thing that the unity mindset gives us. And for those of you Unitics, you know this, because unity is more spiritual than religious. And being spiritual means that you have more of an open mind than a fixed mindset, which is dogmatic.
Yes. And no big surprise to our regular listeners, this falls into our overall point of view of questioning unquestioned answers. Yes. And the interesting thing about a fixed mindset is it's really an either or black and white mindset. And we are more both and folks here around the virtual kitchen table. And this is what they say about it, or she said about it. Fixed mindset is believing that you either have it or you don't, that you're a math person or an artsy person, or you're not. And boy, is that permeating our culture.
Yes.
It certainly is.
Of course, I do think it's important to note we may have preferences that lead us toward one or the other.
Yep.
And that's different than saying, like, just because I feel I'm more artsy and I lean toward that doesn't mean I have a fixed mindset. It means I've identified what my preference is and now I'm exploring that.
Yeah. But
not at the extent that I would deny my ability to also use my other skills.
Yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
I'm just thinking there's something that the churches have certainly have experienced this past 2.5 years with the COVID, because now in terms of church services, churches are discovering that it's not an either or concept, either virtual or in person, but it's a hybrid both.
Yes, that's a really good example. And I thought in my own life where I've had this black and white sort of attitude about what I can and cannot do. And that was in the realm of music. I played the organ, I played the French horn. But then when I would interact with people, I'm thinking of a friend of mine, Richard McDeesey, that they had a different mindset about music. They understood things that I never understood. So I was a good, meticulous play every note, but I would never be able to do jazz. But now I'm questioning that. Is that, well, maybe I can still do that.
Mm-hmm. And that's like the difference between a symphony orchestra and a jazz group, is one has the conductor and everybody knows what their part is and they're very specific. And that's beautiful. And in the jazz group, it's just like, here's the key, here's the general thing we're doing, and let her rip.
Yeah.
And, so there's still a structure, but it's very different. Both are good and they have their place. And I think that's what's so powerful to remember.
Yes. Yes. The next question that she was asked is where have you seen fixed and growth mindsets in your life? What have you learned from that? So she said, when I started graduate school, I noticed the professors were really different. In one seminar, they focused on tearing down students' presentations and ideas. Who was the smartest in the room? Do you guys remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. Who was the smartest in the room? How could they find the fatal flaw? Boy, do I relate to that one. And who could find that quickest? Wow, let me do that again. How could they find the fatal flaw? And who could find that flaw the quickest? And my way of being when I go through life is I tend to see the flaw or the blip or the something that's going to get in the way of completing a project. I've have found it useful. And I've even dated that way by the fatal flaw method.
It kind of reminds me, remember, probably everybody remembers this, it's been around a long time, that big white screen with a little black dot on it, and you ask people what they see, and everybody says a little black dot.
Yes.
And nobody mentions, oh, there's this huge white screen, it's beautiful.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Fatal flaw.
Wow, really, really interesting.
The flip side of the professor, I was going to show, because she said that's one way professors handled it, but then there was a flip side.
Go for it.
Okay. It was more from a culture of, we're going to help you learn how to make this presentation better. We're going to identify the flaws and the mistakes so that we can improve it. And that was more a growth mindset, a culture of growth, so that the students were motivated to make it better and better.
Yeah. And when I was under my ministerial training, when we had to give talks, presentations, homilies, lessons, whatever you want to call them, the policy of our reviewers was only to give us positive feedback. And I didn't like that, because I need to know where I'm screwing up and where I can improve. If you tell me I'm doing good all the time, I don't know if I am or not. I still don't know if I am or not.
And who needs that coach? Why do I need to pay a coach? Well, in that case, it was a class. But if I'm paying a presentation coach, like we do that with people, we coach people at presentations, why pay me if you only want to hear positive comments?
That's
right. Not going to help you at all. I think it's a both and. You need to hear what you're doing well, but you also need to know where you can tweak it, what you can do a little differently, what might be interfering.
Yes.
You know, and when you think about it, that same process has to do with science. If you are a proponent of scientism in science, what that means is that you simply research anything that is in the material universe, and you're not open-minded enough then to also research things that are in what Bohm called the implicate universe, which is a more unmanifest. Well, how can you understand the entire universe if you're only trying to research half of it?
Yes, and science proceeds by making assumptions and then creating experiments or series of experiments that either approve that assumption or disprove it. And the vast majority are disproved. Mm-hmm. And then that provides a body of understanding to design the next experiments.
Yep.
That kind of brings up Tom Peters' quote that we were talking about before the
show.
I don't know how many people remember Tom Peters, but he was really popular at one point. And he and Waterman wrote a book called In Search of Excellence and looked at big companies that were very successful. But one of the quotes that he's known for is, test fast, fail fast, adjust fast. So test, fail, adjust, test, fail, adjust. Ready, fire, aim is what he called it.
That was. So are you saying they were in fasting?
And fasting. They were definitely fasting. That's my kind of fasting. I can do that kind of fasting.
I think that's a repeatable quote.
Okay, so test fast, fail fast, adjust fast.
Yeah.
And it's a cycle. You adjust and then you test again. Test fast, fail fast, adjust fast. So there's no negative implication of failure. Failure is an opportunity to learn.
Yeah, so I know of companies that roll out something new on a small scale. Mm. And if that fails, they go back to the drawing board. If it succeeds, they move forward.
Right.
And, the thing is, he's recommending a 3-point process and not just the 2, because when you test fast and then fail fast, at that point, you can either give up or make the adjustments necessary.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's an attitude thing. And that goes back to, are you fixed? Because the fixed would be, I knew this wouldn't work. Boom.
Yeah. Boom.
I never get anything right. I always screw up. Those would be the fixed brain mentality.
Yeah. And boy, aren't those common beliefs people hold.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely.
So she says this, context influences our thoughts, our emotions, our motivation, our performance, and even the way we interact with people. So context is everything. I think we said that in this program, haven't we? Yeah.
I'm sure we have. Yes.
I was working with one of my students a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about wanting to be 100% authentic all the time. And as we talked about it, I realized as soon as there's one more person in the room, your ability to be authentic shifts. So the only time we can really be 100% authentic is when we're by ourselves.
Hmm.
Get one person in the room, that one person is not going to like everything you say. You get 2 people, you get 3 people, you get a whole congregation full of people, and you have a very interesting context. And that's why I say, for goodness sakes, you can please some of the people some of the time, and you can displease some of the people all the time. Right. And then I usually say, so if you're displeased, I'm sorry. If you're pleased, you're welcome.
And the context is going to come up a little bit later in our discussion, perhaps on our next podcast, because she mentions one of the practices that really, as we think about it, depends on context. So we'll tell you about that a little later on.
Okay.
All right. And I do want to just say one more thing about context, because it so applies in today's environment. The things we say when we're with people we already know how they believe.
Yep.
Is going to be very different than how we phrase things when we're not sure or when we're very aware they're different from our belief.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually don't think that's being inauthentic, because, or non-authentic, whatever the right term would be, because part of my authenticity is the word I like to use, is harmonious as much as possible, unless there's a reason to not be. And so I'm not going to say things I don't believe, yep. But I may intentionally watch how I word things, mm-hmm. or stay away from topics. And that's authentic to who I am.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And a really good example would be, once again, if you tend to use cuss words when you're with your friends, when you get on the platform and you're talking to a congregation, you can't use those words, right?
You should not. Anyway, we know one minister who did, and it was not good.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so where do you want to go next?
How about what's the most important thing that, well, in this case, parents and teachers should know about a growth mindset, and I think it applies to people in general,
yeah.
is that the way we even subtly react to someone's mistake and their performance can send messages beyond what we say.
Well, I certainly had that when I would bring home a low grade, and I would get such disapproval from my parents that that I was working to succeed so I wouldn't get their disapproval, rather yeah. than working to learn something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She has a wonderful study and everything that I know we don't have time to talk about right now. So I would like to suggest that we actually carry this topic over for one more podcast.
Yeah, it needs it.
This is what Bill was referring to. And there's some really interesting discussion around how we respond to people when they make mistakes and that kind of thing that I think is worthy of our discussion.
Yeah, and that makes a nice little cliffhanger, doesn't it?
Yes.
Because that's about what I was about to say, so I'm glad you interjected that. So what do we do at this time? We pivot.
Yay.
We pivot to the absolute word, and today's absolute word comes from September 18th, 2022, and the word is thoughtful. The word is thoughtful. I am thoughtful with my words and actions. Today and every day, I bring divine love and peace to all my encounters by being thoughtful. More than politeness and deeper than kindness, thoughtfulness means I consider the comfort and happiness of others equal to my own. My intention is to let those in my life know that they matter to me. I may reach out to someone who needs an encouraging word, letting them know they got this. They have what it takes to succeed. I may surprise someone with a kind act, anticipating a need and taking care of it before they even ask for help. Each thoughtful word and act lets people in my life know how much they matter to me and how worthy they are of my time and attention. I am thoughtful with my words and actions. I want to say the interesting thing about this one, I almost added feelings to this, because we always talk now about thoughts and feelings. But being thoughtful, I think, automatically includes feelings and emotions and consideration for those things. And so this is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck signing off. Thank you so very much for listening. And for now, goodbye.
And this is Reverend Dr. Cher Holton saying, don't be afraid to make mistakes this week.
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, and the three of us thoughtfully encourage you to be both thoughtful and empathetic this week.